So continuing on our study on the revelation of Jesus Christ, we're going to be in Revelation chapter 2. And we've looked at this map before when we were looking at the seven churches of Asia there. So you see Smyrna. We're going to talk about the church in Smyrna this morning. See Smyrna here. We talked about Ephesus last week. And so Patmos right here. So John, that's where he is at. He is writing the book, just give kind of a reference to everything there. So Smyrna is about 40 miles north of Ephesus. Okay, and so we'll kind of get into some of those details here in a minute. You heard me say before, I'm not huge on the history part of it because history can be flawed, but there are some details about Smyrna that kind of can give some information as we are going to continue in our study and why Jesus is saying some things that he says. So let's first go to chapter 2, verse 8. And if somebody would like to read that, please.
And to the angel of the church of Smyrna write, the first and the last who was dead and has come to life says this.
Okay, and so as we looked and we talked about the church in Ephesus, the angel of the church, even back in Revelation chapter 1, Jesus says that he holds the seven stars in his hands are the angels of the congregation. And so the angel of the church, as we looked at a couple weeks ago, the word angel can be messenger. It's actually the word that's used for John the Immerser when it says in Matthew 11 that, behold, I send my messenger before you. So it's probably the leaders of the congregation or maybe the preacher or whatever. Somebody who is respected amongst us, not the angel visiting, an angel visiting them. Okay, angel means messenger. So if you look at it from that perspective, is that the angel, you know, Gabriel brought a message to Mary. Michael brought a message to whoever, you know. So they are messengers of God. The word is a messenger. So it's probably a particular leader in the congregation or a group of leaders that is brought forth. Now, when I say a particular leader, doesn't mean that there's only one. There's multiple leaders, but it's somebody who is respected in the congregation. Okay. Continuing on there, so Smyrna is thought, and again, it's thought that Smyrna was built around 1000 BC. Again, dates to me I don't like to go hard and fast on dates because if dates are wrong, then the example is wrong. But in this case here, I mean, roughly around 1000 BC. Okay, so it's and actually, even today, the city of Smyrna is not called Smyrna, but it still is an established city today with the ruins within the city. But whereas some of these other cities aren't, even though the ruins are still there, but Smyrna was built quite a bit. You know, it was pretty old. Okay, and because of its location, and we don't have the map up there anymore, but because of its location, it was a good trade city, and especially for Rome, when Rome took it over, they would you know come across the Mediterranean there, and it was a good spot to for port and to be able to trade the rest of the way on the east there. It had been through at least one destruction before this time that John is writing. Okay, but maybe two. Okay, and the reason I say maybe two again is because the around 600, it was destroyed, and then Cyrus, when he come through, Cyrus the Great, or Cyrus the Persian, he came through and destroyed some more stuff with it, and whether they rebuilt it or not, between that time, not necessarily quite clear, but it was still something that was kind of destroyed, at least received a partial destruction in around 600 BC, and then again a few years later when Cyrus came down in the 500s or so there, he destroyed it again. And then even in this time, even though it wasn't at the time John wrote the book, a little bit later, about in the second century AD, it was destroyed again. The point is that it had some destruction and it got rebuilt, where that's not true for all cities. Okay, that doesn't always happen. So because of that, if it survived, it gained the name the City of Life. Okay, now usually, again, like I say, I don't usually go to some things that talked about the city as far as like making a huge point of it, because that can that can always change. History varies from time to time. You find out, 50 years later that something wasn't exactly like we thought 50 years ago. And so if you rely on history and church history even, you're going to be flawed if you're not relying solely on the scripture. But with this case here, that it gained the name the City of Life. Okay, the idea of it been destroyed, and it resurrected again, if you want to call it that way. Okay? So as we continue reading there in verse 8, notice that Jesus says, I'm the first and the last who was dead and who has come to life, says this. So if you think about Smyrna and what they're going to go through, they're not rebuked in any way, but they're going to go through some trials, as we're going to see, and even some tough trials. And they've been through trials. And so Jesus is reminding them, who is the beginning? I'm the first and the last. Who's the beginning and the end? And who truly conquered death? So when we get to the point are we going to put our hope in Smyrna being the city of life, the port city or something that, depending on who is in power, they use Smyrna as a trade city, an important part of trade. It was something that was that they gained wealth or whatever it was from it. When we get to the persecution that Smyrna is going to go through, and even some of the persecution that they are currently going through, is the trust going to be in the City of Life for the one who came to life? And so that picture there is that when he is saying this, the introduction that he's having there is kind of fits Smyrna in the case of the City of Life they're living in, but really for the church at Smyrna, it really wasn't a city of life physically. And so Jesus is reminding them that he is the one who came to life. So remind him who the one who actually has the power over death. Jesus is the one who has the power over death. People will put their trust in certain things, and if you're a world leader, Smyrna at the time was a place that was not the only place, but it was a place that wasn't a have gained great benefit if you controlled the city. And so so if it trusts in that, that's what they're hoping for as a, from a worldly perspective. But Jesus is going to remind the church in Smyrna that he is the one who conquered death, who came to life, so to not fall into that temptation of trusting in the city of life, if you will. Any comments before we move on here to this next verse? So Smyrna, let me just back up here a second. So Smyrna is, Patmos is the island that John is writing from, right here. So Smyrna is right here, Ephesus is right here. And so then you got your other seven churches with the crosses over the squares there where the seven churches. But you also, Colossae, there's a church in Colossae, there's a church in Hierapolis, there's a church in Assos and Troas. But there weren't mentioned, as we mentioned before at the beginning, at the introduction, is that there was other churches that Jesus used, or that Jesus could have used, but he didn't use them. And these seven churches were chosen specifically, and as we're going to kind of see throughout, is that this is going to give us a picture of the church throughout the church age. Yes, it deals with churches at the time and things they're going to go through, but it's going to give us a picture throughout the church age. And so Smyrna, you can see it's right on that little, right close to this little bay here, if you want to call it that. So that port that they could have, and then they'd have access over to the rest of Asia.
So is that Turkey now?
Yeah, that's modern-day Turkey. Yep, yep. So modern-day Turkey. And so that will go, yeah, if you look to a modern map, that gives you an idea of kind of where it is and stuff. And we did have that up before when we had our introduction, but I didn't have it up today. But yeah, so Smyrna is you can see where it's kind of a spot that you could have gained wealth. If you controlled that, you're going to have access to through the port there to have your trade, especially if Rome, because Rome is going to be over here. And so they're going to have access to that trade there, and then you're going to be able to go further to the east. You're welcome.
How come are they talking about shirts there, or they, some of this going to be illustration, or what do you think? Is that
as far as like
just like the seven churches when he talks about in Revelation? Is there?
Are you talking about the church in Smyrna? The church in Smyrna dealt with the things at the time.
Yeah.
But this is being number seven. Seven means a perfection, a picture of completion. So you have seven churches, and there was more than seven churches in Asia that he could have chose from, but he didn't. It wasn't the letters to the churches of Asia. It was letters to the seven churches of Asia. So there's specific things about these congregations that characteristics of these congregations that is going to describe the church as a whole, give us a complete picture of the church throughout the church age. But it does deal with things at the time because you have these seven churches that were going through these things. I mean, Ephesus left their first love, but Smyrna is going through a lot of trials, but they didn't get rebuked. And then we're going to go on to the other ones that have, outside of Philadelphia, everyone else gets rebuked for some reason, and Laodicea doesn't have very much right at all. And so there's churches that are like that today, but there's also churches like that back then as well.
And that might have had a picture of a spot in time, probably, because maybe Laodicea got better, maybe Philadelphia
right.
got worse. You know?
Yeah, maybe they did, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But so it was probably, I mean, the illustration was there for a reason, I guess, the reason why he chose these seven churches there. But,
right.
But it might only been a clear picture for a certain period of time, I don't know.
Right. And
he was using the illustration and the points for so we can even benefit.
Well, and we can benefit because we can see what Philadelphia was like, or we can see what Laodicea was like because he tells about them. So we can use that example of, okay, this is what they were maybe going through. This is what the situation was in that they were in. So we can get a description of why he is saying certain things to them. And so, again, that picture, okay, so maybe in Ephesus when they left their first love, maybe there's congregations that are like that. Or maybe there's individuals that are like that. Or Smyrna, where they're really not rebuked about anything, but they have some persecution and trials coming for them. There's congregations like that, possibly. But there's also maybe individuals like that. But the church as a whole, it represents the church as a whole altogether. You know, so there's parts, you know, I mean, just as in here, as in when he gets to Philadelphia, he says they aren't going to go through trials. Well, Philadelphia wasn't that far from Smyrna. I mean, it looks like it's a little distant on the map, but it's really not that far. So why did Philadelphia say get spared from the trial but Smyrna didn't? And the reason would be is that that's just how the church is. Sometimes the church is persecuted in a certain spot because there's certain people there. And you see that in the book of Acts. Well, when Paul and Silas were in Thessalonica, then they had to hightail it out of there and they went to Berea. And the Bereans actually searched the scriptures and they were eagerly seeking. But then Thessalonians came and persecuted them there. So there wasn't persecution in Berea for a while when there wasn't Thessalonica, and those in Thessalonica came over and started persecuting. So it varies from time to time. And so that's the picture, is that you can say, well, how come I'm not doing anything wrong when I'm getting persecuted? Well, Smyrna was persecuted. How come Laodicea is not going through some trials? Well, because they're doing things wrong, and they're probably not standing up for the truth. So, I mean, there's things that's learning tools that we can take from the examples here that we're going to see as we continue to read on here. Someone would like to read verse 9, please, of Revelation chapter 2.
I know your tribulation and your poverty, but you are rich, and the blasphemy by those who say they are Jews and are not, but are a synagogue of Satan.
Okay. So they had tribulation, but they were also going to have more. Okay, so it wasn't that they were, like, you know, everything was going good in Smyrna and just get, you know, there's some tribulation coming. You know, if you're receiving this letter and you're looking at it from an Ephesus standpoint, you're thinking, okay, yeah, we're doing really good. We're taking a lot of stands, and then he comes and drops the bomb about them leaving their first love. And then Smyrna's like, okay, well, you know, I'm not saying they were bragging, but they were doing good, and they're like, man, we went through some persecution, though. Be nice to get some relief, and then you had to hear that, well, you're going to have some more. Okay, but he is saying, since they were in this so-called city of life, Jesus is the one who actually came to life, and he's saying, I know your tribulation. Okay, I know your tribulation. In Matthew chapter 5, let's turn over there a second. Matthew chapter 5. Matthew 5, if someone would like to read verse 10 through 12, please.
Blessed are those who are persecuted for the sake of righteousness, theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you and persecute you and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward in heaven is great, in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you.
Okay, so persecution is something that the Christians are going to go through, and that varies. It varies from time and it varies from place. But it's something that those who are faithful, it's going to happen sometime or another. And so Smyrna, it just was, you know, it just happened to them a little bit more. And that doesn't mean that they didn't get relief, and it doesn't mean that God didn't care for them. It probably meant more that they could handle it more. That's why they stayed. And maybe why Laodicea is starting to go a little bit off the path, because maybe they're fearing the tribulation a little bit. But Smyrna must not have, because they are going through tribulation, and then they're going to go through more. But Jesus is encouraging them to stay faithful there. Now look back in verse 9 of Revelation chapter 2 again there. He says that he knows their poverty. Okay, Smyrna was a wealthy city. As we mentioned, it was a port city. So it had a lot of stuff. You know, when you have a port city, you have shipments coming in, you have other things that need to happen there. So the city is going to be kind of thriving. It's going to be a wealthy city, but the church is poor. Okay, again, going back to remember this as we're going to go, and I didn't make a note of this on the slide, but when we go and we talk about specifically chapter 6, when it talks about the four horsemen and such, when you talk about the what's called famine, when it's really not called famine, it's really called prosperity for the wealth, and those who are honest don't have much. And you remember Smyrna, because Smyrna was a wealthy city, but the church was poor because people probably knew who they were, and they probably didn't do business with them. I mean, even for us today, I mean, there's probably not any of us here that are really struggling. And I'm not saying that we're just living in a mansion, but even today we're not doing fine, and there's probably a lot of people who know who we are. Okay, so, but the church in Smyrna, there's a reason that they're poor, and it's probably not because they're bad businessmen. It's probably because, and he's referencing that, is because there's persecution going on, and people know who they are, and they're not doing business with them. Because it's not like the opportunity is not there. It's not that it's just a poor city. Smyrna was a wealthy city, so they should have been rich if it was just that way. But people knew who they were. And so we need to remember that as we're going to go later in the study, in the book, as we're going to look at some of those details later. Remember that Smyrna was in a wealthy city. They probably weren't bad businessmen, but they were poor because of what they stood for. Let's go to Matthew chapter 6. Matthew chapter 6. Somebody like to read verse 19 through 21, please, of Matthew chapter 6.
Do not lay up for yourselves treasures upon earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in or steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also.
Okay, so let's turn to Hebrews chapter 13. And that will be the last time we go to Matthew chapter 6, because we'll probably touch on that again when we talk about Laodicea. But the church in Smyrna is laying up treasures in heaven, and that's why they're poor. That's why they're poor physically, but they are rich spiritually. So Hebrews chapter 13, if somebody would like to read verse 5 and 6, please. Okay, so the question is our heart on earthly things, or is it confidently trusting the Lord? And so Smyrna, when they're going through that tribulation and the poverty, because one thing that it's one thing being persecuted, but when you're going through poverty as well, I mean, yeah, we can say, well, I kind of can group together. It still is two separate things. Okay, it's still two separate things. If you had the funds to take care of the tribulation and the wounds you'd get or whatever, you wouldn't, you know, your tribulation would be a little easier, okay? But poverty and tribulation together is that they're persecuted. They were, I don't know to what extent they were persecuted. Jesus does reference a little later that some are going to be thrown in prison. I'm not sure to what extent they had been persecuted before, but they were also poor, and so that adds to that persecution. But they had to get through that to not be rebuked by the Lord, is that they had a heart of setting their treasures in heaven, where, as we're going to go, you know, look at Laodicea, they can't serve two masters, and that's why the one that they chose was that of the earth, okay? And so we'll see that when we study through that. But they had a heart set on the Lord. So back to chapter 2 of Revelation, verse 9. as I mentioned before, it said that the church in Smyrna was physically poor, but they were spiritually wealthy because their hearts were right. Because their heart was set on the Lord. Their treasures were set in heaven. And so Jesus references that. Yeah, I know your poverty, but you are rich. Okay, so that, you know, if they had poverty and tribulation and they had rebuking coming to them, you can just think of that's like that would just be their last thing that they had. If they were doing something wrong, you can just kind of see that pressure would be pretty tough. And obviously, because of their poverty and because they are rich spiritually, again, points out to me is that they weren't bad business people, but they were persecuted is why they were poor. And so they were encouraged that, hey, you are wealthy, though. You are rich. You are rich spiritually because of the stands that they have taken. Anybody have any comments on that before we move on? Okay, so verse 9 also, Jesus says, talks about those who are Jews, who say they are Jews but are not, but are a synagogue of Satan, which this really wasn't planned either, talking about the shepherds in sermon today and then talking about this. It wasn't set out that way to line up. But what does he mean then when he says those who say they are Jews and are not? Well, I don't like to use the dates, but you have two different dates or two different areas of dates that Revelation is supposedly written in. You'll have your full preterists that are going to think it's talking specifically about the destruction of Jerusalem. And so they have to date the book being written in the 60s then, in the 60 AD area or whatever, okay, during Nero or close to Nero's age, or Nero's reign, okay? Then you have your partial preterists who might be talking more on dealing with Rome, talking about something in the first century, and that date's going to be a little bit later because they have that tied to the beast in their mind is Domitian in the 90s AD area. And so that book is written, they say the book is written a little bit later then, maybe in the 80s, early 90s at the latest. And then your premillennialist really doesn't matter to them when the book is written because they still think it's in the future. The point, though, that I want to point out, whenever it was written, because it doesn't matter when it was written to make the point all the time, there's a reason that God didn't set the dates in the books when he wrote it, because it wasn't needed. But whatever it was, if it was written in the 60s, the Jews weren't popular in the 60s. They weren't popular because they're about to be destroyed by Rome. They're back and forth fighting with Rome. Okay, so these people here that he's saying, they weren't people who were taking the name of Jews only, just to persecute the church. They weren't just going and voluntarily saying, "Yeah, I'm a Jewish," because it wasn't popular. And if it was in the 90s or the late 80s or 90s, most of the Jews would have been destroyed by then. I mean, the Jewish influence would have been a lot different. If you look in the three Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, when you look at how they say time, they'll talk about first hour, fourth hour, fifth hour, seventh hour. That's Jewish time. But when you look at John's Gospel, which was written after the fall of Jerusalem, you see he tells time like Roman time. So the Jewish influence on the world, I mean, John was a Jew. He was formerly a Jew. So it would have been natural for him to use the Jewish Jewish analogies a lot of times when he's talking about, like, when Jesus was in the first hour, they took him for his trial. Well, in John, it says it was the sixth hour. Well, that means that, so the first hour, according to the Jew, means it was 6 a.m, first hour of day. In Roman time, 6 o'clock in the morning was 6 o'clock in the morning. So you see the difference there. So my point is if it's later, then the Jews aren't popular either. Either way, the Jews aren't popular, and so either way, the Jews, these people aren't calling themselves Jews just for the sake of calling themselves Jews, like we have Christians today call themselves Christians just for the sake of it. Okay? So they aren't Jews that he's talking about here. The physical Jews hated Jesus and hated the church. They persecuted the church. So when God destroyed them for it, and we don't have time for that today, but if you look in Matthew 28 or 21, verse 28, all the way through Matthew 22, verse 7, you're going to see a few parables there that talk about that's taken away from the Jews and given to someone else. And God is,
who does not bear, break forth and shout, you who are not in labor, for more numerous are the children of the desolate than of the one who has a husband. And you, brethren, like Isaac, are children of promise, but as at that time, he who was born according to the flesh persecuted him who was born according to the spirit, so it is now also. But what does the scripture say? Cast out the bondwoman and her son, for the son of the bondwoman shall be an heir with the son of the free woman. So then, brethren, we are not children of bondwoman, but of the free woman.
Okay, so these examples, and we could look at others, but when we see here, the true Jews or the true Israel or the true Jerusalem, it is talking in contradiction to the physical, as in verse 25 of Galatians 4 there specifically. Hagar is Mount Sinai, and she corresponds to present Jerusalem. Physical Jerusalem is what she is, and Hagar was a slave. But Jerusalem above is free, and she is our mother, and he uses the idea that the offspring of Sarah, Isaac, is that's who we're like. We're not children of slavery. We're children of the promise. We're not the old Jerusalem. We're the true Jerusalem. We're not the old Jews. We're the true Jews. So when Jesus says there, he's referring to, you should be, in a positive way, he's referring to Jews. He's referring to the true Jews, which is the church. He's saying they call themselves Christians. In other words, I'll just change the word. They call themselves Christians, but they're not, and they're actually of the synagogue of Satan. And so the reason that view is not taught is because you have two different things there. Is you have the premillennialists don't believe that the false prophets and antichrist and stuff have come yet. But let's look in 2 Peter here, 2 Peter chapter 2. Second Peter chapter 2, someone would like to read 1 through 3, please.
But false prophets also arose among the people, just as there will also be false teachers among you, who will secretly introduce destructive heresies, even denying the master who bought them, bringing swift destruction upon themselves. Many will follow their sensuality, and because of them, the way of the truth will be maligned. And in their greed, they will exploit you with false words. Their judgment from long ago is not idle, and their destruction is not asleep.
Okay, so we talked about the shepherds in assembly this morning, about the shepherds were not the anti-God people at start. They're the people from within start. And Peter warns here that there is going to be false prophets that are among you. They arose among the people. What do you think he's referring to? He's probably referring to the shepherds that led the people astray, the Israelites. And he's saying, but there also will be false teachers rise among you. And he warns about them. And in John, in 1 John, again, so John's the writer of the Gospel of John. John is the writer of Revelation. And John is also the writer of the epistles of John. So if you go to 1 John chapter 2, somebody like to read 18 and 19, please. Okay, so John here, and you hear people talk about the last days and last hour, and John is saying this, it is the last hour in his day. Now, that tells us that hour is something different than what people think it is. Hour by God's time is different than what man thinks of an hour. And so when he says there, notice what he doesn't say. He says, "You have, just as you have heard that the Antichrist is coming." He doesn't say the Antichrist. He says, just as you have heard that Antichrist is coming. He's not specifying it to a single person. He said, you have heard that Antichrist is coming from Peter and from Paul. You've heard that that's coming. And now he says, even now many Antichrists have appeared. From this we know it's the last hour. Because remember when Paul writes to Timothy and he says in the last days there'll be mockers and they'll tickle their own ears and such. He warned about it. And John is saying that we know it's the last hour because they're already here. Because the Jewish influence, by the time John is writing his epistles, just like I think that John's writing is later than 60, okay, personally, just because I think it fits the timeline. I know his gospel's after the fall of Jerusalem because of the influence of the Jewish or literature is not there as far as like how he words things. But 1 John, 2 John, 3 John, and Revelation, I believe, also after that. So the Jews weren't really a factor at this point. And if for some reason it was 60, like I said, the Jews weren't popular either. So there's going to be, the Jews aren't going to be able to carry out persecution like they did in the book of Acts, as we see, when they stir up the leaders of the city and take them against the church. And Paul and Silas and Barnabas and whoever and Peter, they're not going to be able to stir up the city leaders and stir them against them because they're not going to be popular in 60 AD because they've been bickering back and forth with Rome. So John is saying here, this is written after the fall of Jerusalem, and he's saying there's many antichrists have already come, for this we know it's the last hour. And it says in verse 19, if they would have, they went out from us, but they were not really of us, for if they would have been of us, they would have remained with us, but they went out so that they would be shown that they were not of us. They were a part of the church at one time. Just like the shepherds in Ezekiel 34, and the idea of that shepherding of Israel, they were good at one time, and then they devoured the sheep. They were apart at one time, and then they left. The Antichrists were a part of the church at one time, and then they left. And that's why Paul gives the description of the man of lawlessness sitting in the temple, because the temple is the church, and they were within the church, and they left the church. And we talked about that when we went through the Lord's second coming. But false teachers were amongst the church at that time. They looked like Christians. I meant to say at that, there's a typo in there. They looked like Christians, but were not, but they were of a synagogue of Satan. So when you think about this as well, John on an island, when he is on a prison island, he can say things, but he's going to say things in code a lot too. And not necessarily code as in like being mysterious, but he's using terms of the scripture because God spoke in code, if you want to use that term, in the Old Testament. First Peter says that the writers of the Old Testament didn't know what they were writing about when they prophesied about the sufferings of Jesus. First Peter chapter 1 says that. When they wrote about the sufferings of Jesus, they didn't know who it was. They didn't know because God didn't reveal it to them. They prophesied about it, yeah, but they didn't understand who it was. If they did understand who it was, why did they kill him? Okay, so they didn't understand who it was when they wrote about it. And so God, and so to speak, would have spoken in a code, if you want to say that. So it's not out of the ordinary for John to use terms like that when he says, when Paul goes and teaches and people understand who the true Jews are, and John goes and says, and actually Jesus is saying this, and he's saying, let me get to one more here. Go to John, 1 John chapter 4. But when he's saying that there, it's not out of the ordinary for John to be speaking in a term that the Christians are going to understand, but the rest of the world are not. Especially the people who he has to give the letter to get out, he's in prison. In 1 John chapter 4, verse 2, it says, by this you know the Spirit of God, every spirit that confesses that Jesus Christ has come, and the flesh is from God. And every spirit that does not confess Jesus is not from God. This is the spirit of the Antichrist, which you have heard is coming and now is already in the world. Okay, so the Antichrist or Antichrist, the system was in the world in John's time already. So the Jews, when John says or when Jesus says that they call themselves Jews and are not, he is saying they are Christians, they call themselves Christians and they're not. And they're persecuting the church because the Jewish persecution wasn't there because they were out of the way. But they also weren't Satanists either. Because he references them as they call themselves Jews. They look like it. They look like the sheep, but they weren't. Yes, they are servants of Satan, but see, that changes our view on what we should let slide and what we should stand up against, because it's easy to stand up against Satanism, but it's not very easy to stand up against people who call themselves Christians and they actually aren't, but they still are servants of Satan. And they're the ones who are carrying out the persecution to the church in Smyrna. Probably some form of religion, of Christian religion, if you want to call it that, that gave into the state and was probably, I mean, I don't know what they did, but they gave hail to Satan in some form or the other, as far as persecuting the church and as far as compromising on truth. Maybe it was idol worship or whatever it was. They compromised with stuff, but they still tried to call themselves spiritual Jews. They called themselves spiritual Jews, but they weren't. But they actually are a synagogue of Satan. So they are close to the truth, but they are servants of Satan. They weren't Satanists. They are servants of Satan. Any comments or questions before we move on to the next slide?
Is would that be like the Gnostics? I know Mark Miller is talking about that.
Well, that and 1 John, yeah, they would be like the Gnostics. Some of that stuff has already been there, and John is dealing with that at that time. So that would be someone that isn't Jewish, or it isn't Muslim, or isn't other religion, but it is kind of a little different religion, but they are trying to hold to the name Jesus in some sort. And another example would be those seven brothers in Acts, where they cast out demons by Jesus whom Paul preaches. They were still Jews, but they were trying to be a part of it because they saw benefit in it. And so that it's not surprising that, I mean, the details, I don't know for sure on how all the details were, but it wouldn't be surprising for them to try and hold to some form of, well, yeah, we're Christian too, but they really did, their teachings weren't. And so, yeah, the Gnostics would be the same there. And whether this was specifically what was happening in Smyrna, I don't know that for sure, but I do know that there was some sort of, well, yeah, we are Christians. You know, they would claim that, but they really were the ones who were persecuting them. Right? And I'm not saying that they were the only ones that were persecuting them, but Jesus does say that they're persecuted by them. They're persecuted by those who call themselves Jews but are not, and which would mean they call themselves Christians and are not. And so that's what they're leading the charge, if you will. So I guess another thing, if we're applying it to our day, don't be surprised when other congregations around town are the ones that are persecuting us when the time comes. Because that happens.
I was just going to say, if someone is not for Christ,
right,
then by default they're against Christ.
Right, exactly. Yeah, so if we think, well, yeah, Satanists, like those way off over here, other religions, that those are the ones outside of Christ. Well, like you say, that you can be outside of Christ and not be for him. You know, you can... You'd be against them and look like it. Okay, we'll move on to a couple more slides here. So verse 10 of chapter 2, someone would like to read that, please.
Do not fear what you're about to suffer. Behold, the devil is about to cast some of you into prison so that you will be tested, and you will have tribulation for 10 days. Be faithful until death, and I will give you the crown of life.
Okay, so Smyrna was going to go through, the church in Smyrna was going to go through more tribulation. The 10 days, as we mentioned before, 10 is a number of completeness. And so I don't think it literally has to mean 10 days. But 10 days, you're going to undergo persecution for 10 days. It's like that completion, like a completion of time. They're going to deal with persecution, whereas we're going to see later that Philadelphia gets spared from that persecution. And it doesn't say anything about Laodicea, because Laodicea was pretty lukewarm. It probably didn't have a lot of persecution coming. But Smyrna had some persecution coming, and I don't think it was only just for 10 days. I think it's that's a picture of that completion of time. You know, whatever it was for them, that's what that picture is there. You know, it could kind of be compared to Job. You know, you think, well, because a lot of times the natural idea is that, well, what sin did they commit to have the persecution? Well, they didn't have it. They didn't have the sin. They were faithful like Job. So when you think of like Job, why does Satan go and want to test Job? Because he's faithful. And so Smyrna is faithful, so they're going to deal with the persecution. Doesn't mean they're doing anything bad, because Philadelphia didn't do anything bad either, and they're spared. And so again, that picture is that you just because you have persecution doesn't mean you're doing something wrong, and just because you don't have persecution doesn't mean you're doing something wrong either. Okay? And it also doesn't mean you're doing something right, but I mean, both ways, both Philadelphia and Smyrna were doing things right, and one of them had persecution and one of them doesn't, and that's that picture of the church. That's what happens to us. That can happen on a church as a whole somewhat. That can happen with individual congregations. It also can happen individually. Job was obviously Job is prior to that, but Job suffered quite a bit individually. So it can happen there as well. Verse 11 of Revelation 2. Someone like to read that, please.
He who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. He who overcomes shall not be hurt by the second death.
Okay, so in just a reference, if you want to look up John chapter 5, verse 24, Jesus says that those who believe in him don't go into judgment, they pass through judgment into life. Okay, and so that's what Jesus is. Again, you have the city of life. Okay, it had been pretty easy for Smyrna to fall into the trap. Well, maybe we should, this persecution's coming again, and we've been dealing with this persecution. It had been pretty easy to fall back into, well, maybe we should give in a little bit here. Because, you know, Smyrna is a prosperous city. There's a place for us here if we were to give in a little bit, maybe take a little less of a stand. They would have been wrong, obviously. But yes, this applies to Smyrna at the time because they went through these things. But also applies to the church as a whole while we're still on earth. And so the faithful are still going to go through trials. And they were encouraged not to, you know, you're going to get the crown of life. You're going to get true life. Don't put the trust in the city that's prosperous and you can have an abundant physical life, the so-called city of life. And so don't put your trust into that. I'm going to give you the crown of life, those who are faithful until death, because you're going to be tested. You're going to be thrown into prison. Okay? Be faithful until death, and he who overcomes will not be hurt by the second death. The same would apply both there, is that they're not hurt by the second death. They have the crown of life. They pass through judgment into life. And so the trust is in the city of life, in this case here with Smyrna, the world. Because we can go along with the world and have a prosperous time for a while. And then when we're just like the leaders of Israel, or even the leaders today, or the world today, religious or political, we're good to them as long as we're beneficial to them. And as soon as we're not beneficial to them anymore, then we're done. And so we want to put the trust into that, and that'll end sometime. Or is a trust in God, and that's where God is encouraging Smyrna to go there. Is like, I'm going to give you actually true life. So continue through this tribulation just a little bit more. Anybody have any comments, questions? Okay, well, we'll stop there and pick up with Pergamum next week.